chick flicks, romantic comedies, rom-coms. You love them, you hate them,
but we are here to eviscerate them. Welcome to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast.
We are your hosts, Eliza Bertrand
and Janelle Walker. Now, let's get on with some feminist joy killing. You're in beautiful, sunny Southern California. You're in a farmhouse. It's been renovated beautifully. There's a garden outside. There is a beautifully set dinner party table. Who's at the head of it? Alec Baldwin. Who's at the other head of it? Steve Martin. Who's bringing in fresh-made chocolate croissant? Meryl fucking Streep. Eliza, this is the movie we're talking about today, and I just, like, could not be happier.
What a fantastical picture you just painted for me, Janelle. I just floated away to that world for a moment.
Honestly, that's all I can think about with this movie is just, like, of all of the wish fulfillment rom-coms that we have watched for this podcast, this was the one that struck a chord with me the most.
Oh, yeah, this is for sure a fantasy, right? Like, it almost at times does reach a sort of magical level of, like, wouldn't it be nice?
And funnily enough, the song, Wouldn't It Be Nice, shows up quite a few times in the film. So I think they knew. I think yeah. Nancy Meyer knew what she was doing.
Yeah, Nancy Meyer, she's a little experienced at this. She knows what she's doing.
And honestly, with all of the late 20s / early 30s characters that we've seen in these rom-coms, I have never related more than to Jane Adler, 50 to 60 something divorcee.
I wrote that in my notes at one point. I was like, why am I, as a 30-year-old, relating so much to this group of 50 and 60 something women? Which we'll have to get into. I don't know. Maybe there's something just to the fact that Nancy Meyers and these actors have hit a point where there's a real truth to their art that maybe some of our younger offerings haven't had.
Oh, I believe that. This movie is just full of breezy confidence, like a linen caftan from Talbots. That's what this movie is.
Oh, you mean like Meryl's entire wardrobe?
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, for anyone who hasn't caught on, we're talking about It's Complicated.
That's right.
Janelle, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
All right. Here's your Google summary for It's Complicated, the year of our Lord, 2009. Jane, played by Meryl Streep, is a successful restaurateur and has been divorced from Jake, played by Alec Baldwin, for many years, although they remain friends. When an innocent meal together turns into an affair, Jane finds that she is the other woman in the now remarried Jake's life. Meanwhile, Adam, played by Steve Martin, is an architect hired to remodel her kitchen and is still stinging from his own divorce. He finds himself falling in love with Jane, but soon realizes that he has become part of a triangle. Well, Eliza, that's what Google says the movie's about. But what is It's Complicated really about?
It's Complicated is about architecture porn. And also sometimes there's like food and or plot mixed in there.
It is. Honestly, I really have to say that what I expected coming into this movie was going to be a lot of like wisdom about age and the complexity of relationships when you're getting older. And that's not what it's about. It's really not. It's just, welcome to Williams and Sonoma. Would you like a hot chocolate sample?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, the world that exists in the homes of the people in this movie is, even if you're imagining that these people are successful and wealthy and all of that, it's still utterly ridiculous to imagine that these are actually where these people live and how they live their lives.
It is so true. Like, of course, like, on some level, I'm like, okay, yes, wish fulfillment. But, like, Jane seems to own one bakery, like, one high-end bakery, and she has a full-on Martha Stewart-level, like, chateau.
Oh, my God. And
in California.
Expanding on it, right? Like, the whole plot is that Steve Martin is her architect who's coming in and designing a huge expansion on her house. There's this scene where they're standing out in essentially like the backyard, the side yard, where he's plotted out where the extension on the house will be, and he's explaining it. And it's like the size of the house. I mean, she's doubling the size of this house, and she has some line about, oh, finally, I'll have a real kitchen, which is so funny when you consider how many scenes take place in her ginormous, beautiful kitchen.
I had the same question. Like, what is, I really actually wanted this to be an HGTV special where they showed us the before and after, because I super wanted to see what Steve Martin came up with. I wanted to know. I wanted to see them wake up together in her new bedroom and look at the view to the ocean.
That's the sequel.
Please. Come on. It's been 10 years. Nancy Myers, hit us with it. But also, like, Alec Baldwin's character, Jake, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe part of it is that Jane was married to Jake, and Jake made a lot of money. I mean, he zips around in a little Porsche as a hot young wife, so presumably he's super rich. But do they even say what he does? Is he a lawyer?
They say at some point he's been made partner or something like that, but it's not clear if he's a lawyer or an insurance guy or, you know, he works in business of some kind. Unclear what. And then, on top of that, we've got their three kids to deal with, who are all young adults. And their oldest daughter and her fiance at one point throw a party for everyone. And they make a quote, they make a statement about, I'm not even sure we can fit 40 people in our house. Well, it'll be tight. And then their house is like an event space. I mean, it's huge. There's like this giant deck with a terrace backyard and like this huge winding interior. They've got a huge, like, catering tables everywhere. I was like, what do you guys do? You're supposed to be, like, 27.
I had so many questions about that. So it is, like, the breeziness of the movie in that way, we do have to admit, as we've said, definitely comes from an assumption of, like, upper middle class money situations.
Yeah, maybe these are people who live in California and, like, wealthy fucking California.
But the movie isn't about that. It just, like, lets that be the backdrop.
Yeah, that's just like, an assumption to be made from the opening shots of, like, the beautiful terraced houses in their neighborhood. And then it's not addressed ever again, because that's not the point.
And it kind of makes me wonder if, like, oh, is this sort of, like, I mean, maybe this is part of the fantasy too, right? Especially if you think that the audience for this movie are, like, Nancy Myers' peers, right? Which is, like, women in their 60s at this time, who have reached, like, near retirement age, who are empty nesters. Like, in real life, you'd actually be, like, sort of terrified about the financial cliff that is retirement in a modern America. Mm-hmm. But instead, this movie's like, no, retirement is the time that I'm going to take on several lovers and a new extension on my house. And darling, I'll have every Hermes scarf. Like, it's there is definitely a class fantasy here that I had not really considered until we started talking about it. It is definitely related to age, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And as much as we joke that it just sort of exists in the background, I do think it affects the plot as well. Because, as you pointed out in the Google summary, you know, there's this whole affair that happens between Jane and Jake, this divorced couple who are now about 60. And Jake keeps saying, you know, I think 10 years apart was good for us. I feel like we have fewer worries. I feel like we're getting along better. We're not fighting. This is just fun. And I think that you know, wealthy retirement fantasy does feed into that, because at this point you have to assume that, you know, they'd been married for whatever, 20, 30 years. During that time, they were both establishing their careers. They were both working long hours. They were raising three kids. And now their children are adults. They both are the successful runners of their businesses, whatever those are. They have more freedom in their own schedule because they can dictate it. It's not being dictated by their children or by their bosses. They have the money to rent out a nice suite hotel for, you know, the afternoon for a little fling. And it's not like some scuzzy motel room. It's not like a huge thing that they had to save up for. And so for Jake, he keeps saying, like, this is so easy and fun. And I think that's part of it, is that they've hit this point where a lot of the tough stuff they had to get through is no longer an immediate concern. Whereas in his current marriage with a much younger woman, where they're talking about, do they want more kids? They have a young child. She's, you know, trying to figure out her career. There are still a lot of those challenges.
Wow, that's so insightful and true. Like, it does, put your finger on exactly what I was thinking when I was watching this movie, which is that what makes it so joyful is that it looks back on youth as a good thing to have gone through, like a fun memory, like a thing you can reminisce about. But it also highlights that there's a lot of struggle with youth that you can pass by, right? That, like, you can be content in your 60s and be a divorced woman who is content in your 60s. You know, there's, like, a really quiet radicalism just to that statement, because we're always made to believe that, you know, divorced single women over 50 are like tragic, right? And this movie completely turns that on the head and makes, like you say, the young wife who's trying to get pregnant again kind of tragic.
Yeah, in fact, I would say it's pretty mean-spirited towards the young wife, actually. One of my biggest problems with this movie is the sort of mean-spirited attitude towards young women who marry older men and take them away from the older women, which there's a real undercurrent of.
Some hurt feelings, maybe, one might wonder about.
It felt a bit pointed, and, you know, maybe that's clearly not out of nowhere. There's a reason that trope exists. You know, but there's all these scenes where Jane's, whatever, at the doctor, at the store, and there's all of these men cuddling up with these young women, and she just sort of keeps staring at them and glaring at them, and then her husband's new wife is such a caricature. She's over the top, and she wears, like, a bikini and a sarong to their friend's, you know, anniversary party, and she ran off and had a fling with some other guy, so now she has a 5-year-old, who is, by the way, the only actual non-white character in the entire movie. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's an exoticized thing there as well. And so it does, for a movie that is otherwise so sort of joyous, there is a mean-spirited thread woven through there.
Yeah, this it makes me think about, there's this cultural philosopher called René Girard, and he writes about violence. And the thing he says about violence is that in every society, there is always a scapegoat that has to be sort of rejected and acted upon in order for society to be at peace. And I feel like the scapegoat for this movie is absolutely the character Agnes, played by Lake Bell. And it's so funny to me, too, that the scapegoat in this movie is played by Lake Bell, who I think of as being kind of like a stoner comedian in a lot of ways. Like, she kind of took on very different roles after this movie, so that's sort of funny in hindsight. But yes, I think that there is definitely a weird thing that goes on where somehow Agnes becomes the thing that broke up Jake and Jane, even though we have these scenes where they, like, for example, at one point, Jake and Jane are supposed to meet up for a dinner, and Jake doesn't arrive because Agnes needed him to stay home because they're trying to get pregnant. Jane resented that, got mad at him, and was calling him out on, you know, not being trustworthy and bringing up these old issues in their relationship. And that scene is really helpful in contextualizing their past and the reasons why they got divorced in the first place, but it doesn't quite hold Jake accountable for his behavior and his role in ending the marriage and in the affair that broke up their marriage in the first place. Really, Agnes is pretty constantly thrown under the bus for it.
Yes, I think that the one scene that I thought did handle it better is near the end. They have a sort of much more honest conversation after the affair has ended and they're just sort of wrapping things up. And Meryl Streep says something to Alec Baldwin's character along the lines of, "I'm sorry for the part I played in our divorce. I've never had to own up to that before because when you cheated, I didn't have to." And I thought that that was such a great line because it's so simple, but it tells you so much about what was going on. Clearly, over the course of their marriage, things were deteriorating. They were starting to have troubles. You know, they were fighting or they were growing apart, whatever it was. And then he cheated and she got the golden ticket to just say, well, this is over and it's your fault.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that does happen. Sometimes, you know, a couple is waiting for the shoe to drop that ends it, whether that's cheating, whether that's someone moving out, whether that's, you know, whatever the lie is. And I thought it was quite insightful of her character to reach this point where she was like, look, we both messed up, but you messed up in this really big way that allowed me to scapegoat you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the movie has a lot to offer in terms of its sort of like wisdom about marriage and age in that specific vein. Like, you know, I've never been married. You've never been married that I know of.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, Janelle.
But I think both of us can see in this movie, like even though we've never been married, that it has this real thoughtfulness about, you know, how having such a long-term relationship with someone creates a very different dynamic between the two of you, right? The idea of not being finished keeps coming up in this movie. And it's not because Jake and Jane have this particularly cosmic important connection or anything like that. We're not made to believe that they're soulmates or anything. But it's just this really practical thing of like, hey, we have children, we have history, we have past, and that makes things complicated. Duh.
There it is. Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the other things that struck me as I was watching this time around is that one of the things that makes this plot work, and one of the reasons that you have to do this plot with an older cast and a story about an older couple, is that all of the characters who are, let's say, over 50 in this have reached a point in their lives where they're quite honest about what's happened in their lives. You know, because you sort of have to be at a certain point, right? Like, Steve Martin's character is going through a much more recent divorce, and he and Meryl Streep talk quite openly about their divorces the whole time. You know, and we as young people are told, like, you know, you don't talk about an ex on a first date, right? You don't bring that up. You don't mention them too often. But, like, how do you not talk about your ex if you were married to her for 20 years? It's different, right? Because that's the part of your life that you have to discuss. Do you have kids? Where have you lived? What have you been up to? What decisions have you made in your life? You know, you can't just like not bring up your ex-spouse because that's such an important part of it. And so they're very honest with each other in a way that a younger couple wouldn't be from the get-go if one of them was still trying to figure things out with her ex. The scene with Meryl and all of her friends, which is a great scene because it's, again, just so joyous and fun. You know, they're just openly talking about her being cheated on and her being divorced and another one of the friends being divorced and her having been on a shitty date and one of their friends, her husband died a few years ago. And, you know, here are the bad things about it, but also here are the good things about it, that, you know, she has this freedom. And it's a kind of honesty that you don't get with a younger crowd because everyone's still trying to put on a front and, you know, be a specific goal rather than just who they are.
Exactly. And I think that that is part of where the joy of it comes from for you and me as young women in our, you know, late 20s/early 30s.
Sorry.
Right on the cusp. I got one more month, guys. I got one more month in my 20s. I'm hanging on to it. But yeah, so I think what makes this so joyous for us at the age that we are watching it is that they have sort of gone beyond the achievements that we are pressured into getting for ourselves that we have not yet. And that's where the joy and the joie de vivre comes from in this movie that you don't get in rom-coms that are about women who are being crushed by the pressure of getting married and having kids. Once you've already been married, once you've already had the kids, like what lies beyond that? And what this movie offers you is this sort of like nirvana of post-marriage, post-kids, post-divorce life where you can just be a fucking human being, which is, I don't think that's probably exactly what it's actually like, but it does. The contrast feels very light. It feels very airy. It feels like the pressure is off.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think that's, you know, what this movie is trying to convey, that sort of, that freedom, that breath of fresh air. Although I will say, one of the things that I like about the movie and one of the things that I think does help it to feel so sort of joyous the whole time rather than like it's making a really pointed commentary is that we also get the juxtaposition of the three young adult children. And they're all at different stages. One of them has just graduated college and it's implied he's moving back home with his mom. One of them is a few years out and she seems to be moving in with a couple of friends. She's like packed a bunch of stuff into a shitty car and is talking about like getting there as soon as possible to help everyone unpack. And then the oldest one is engaged and she and her fiance have clearly been together for quite some time and they have a nice house and clearly a pretty, you know, sort of well-established life. But all of them at the various points in their life also seem sort of excited about the next stage. Yeah. And then this is a movie about a woman who's experiencing yet another stage in her life. And so I do think there's a nice message that it's not about reaching a particular goal or experiencing any one particular thing, but about allowing yourself to live within the moments and the stages as they change, which I don't feel like, I feel like that's a nuance you don't see very often, especially in, you know, in romantic movies like this.
Yeah, you're so right. And I think part of that spirit is encapsulated in part in one of my favorite scenes, which is when Jane goes to her shrink. And she sort of begs him to tell her whether or not she should have the affair with Jake. And he more or less tells her it might be a good thing to do the affair, but he kind of avoids it, right? Like he dodges telling her what to do. And in that, and I think that's part of it, right? It's part of the nuance. It's part of that. This movie's not going to tell you what choices to make, but it's going to allow you to sort of like live in the space of like, hey, do what makes sense when you're in that transition. Like the journey is the important part. It's going to teach you something.
It's nice to have something where the message is the journey is still happening even when you're 60. You know, I feel like so much of media tells us, like, the journey ends when you get married and have kids, or the journey ends when you get your dream job or whatever. And that's not what this message is. And this comes from the mind of a woman who's in her 60s, right? Like, this comes from someone who's living that as she's telling this story. And so there is an authenticity to it, even within this sort of overly perfect, overly wealthy, overly white, overly fantastical world of this setting.
Yeah, I think we should actually talk about Nancy Myers for a bit, because that's something I was realizing as I was looking through her oeuvre, you know, her list of movies, that I don't know that we've actually covered many of her films, if any. But she's such a renowned writer-director in rom-coms. I mean, she's kind of a giant of the genre. So, I mean, if we had to typify what a Nancy Myers project is, like, what does that look like? What are her signatures?
That's such a great question. You know, I think that it is sort of surprising that we haven't actually done a Nancy Myers yet, although I'm sure that this won't be the last one we do.
I'm sure.
I think a lot of them do have this sort of fantasy element where things are, you know, the characters are tend to be wealthy, or at least well off, shall we say. You know, things always get wrapped up with a bow by the end, even when there's other life complications that in the real world would make a relationship more difficult. But I think that in the end, her characters are good people, and she wants them to be able to have their experiences and go on their journeys and then end up with a happy ending, because they are ultimately good people who are trying to live their best lives.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's very, like, if I had to give it, like, a tactile description, I feel like a Nancy Myers movie feels like a warm hug while a vanilla-scented candle is burning. Like, it's just very cozy. It's very nice. It's very...
Yeah, it is a warm hug from William Sonoma.
Yeah, it's a warm hug from William and Sonoma.
It's like a warm hug from your friend's wealthy aunt.
Yes. Oh, you know? God, yes.
Like, we've all got, like, the friend who's got the weird, you know, the weird relative who you're like, okay, I don't know why they have their money. I don't know if it's, like, that they married some old rich guy, or that, like, somehow they got the only money in the family or whatever. But they always, you know, come into the room with fancy scarves and expensive bottles of wine, and they have fantastic stories to tell about where they've been. But they're, like, really lovely people who want to share with everyone and want to hear about your life. But then they sort of flounce out of the room after the party, and you're like, okay, back to reality. I feel like that's the Nancy Myers movie.
Oh, God, I think that's exactly right. And what's wonderful about the cast of this movie, and why I think it sings so well to me, is that they all sort of have that energy, too. Like, I feel like Meryl Streep is, like, the perfect figure in that world. Like, she is that aunt, for sure.
Right, where you're like, I should hate this woman, but she's so great. I just want to, like, hear her tell more stories.
And that's the thing, is, like, she's such a magnificent craftsperson as an actor that there are moments in this film where I think, and this part was written for her, we should say. So it's very clearly, like, thrown for an actor of her caliber. Another actor could have made those lines absolutely insufferable. Like, when she's talking about studying in Paris as a pastry chef, and when she's talking about all the things that she wants for the extension on her ridiculous Martha Stewart mansion. Mm-hmm. Like, some other actors could have made that feel, like, so over the top, like, so cliche, so fantastical. And she just grounds it in this emotional reality that is warm and inviting and not exclusive. Like, you can be part of her world the way that she acts it. And there's also this, like, I know I'm just going on about Meryl Streep, but I just admire her so much as an actor. There's a scene when they go to the hotel in New York City for their son's college graduation. There's a moment where she gets into an elevator with a couple, and she's by herself with the couple, and the couple are sort of canoodling and being very romantic with each other. And she does an entire Broadway play with her face about this couple. She tells you an entire emotional journey with, like, I swear to God, a 5-second clip. And if you don't understand what an amazing actor Meryl Streep is, don't watch Kramer versus Kramer. Sophie's Choice, forget it. Watch It's Complicated. See her in these light as air, romantic comedies and see what she still does with it. I mean, it is unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, her comedic chops are so on display here. And let's keep in mind, she's acting across from Steve Martin and Alec Baldwin, right? Like, these are two of the guys who have hosted SNL more than almost anyone else in history, right? Like, these are the highest level, you know, seasoned comedians you can get in Hollywood. And she's the funny one in the movie, right? Like, both of them are almost the straight man to her funny man. Like, Alec Baldwin obviously has these scenes that are also sort of over-the-top physical comedy. But most of the time, he's sort of playing this, like, he's trying to woo her, right? So he's playing it quite straight as a romantic character. And then she's the one who's making all these faces like, oh my God, how did I get stuck in this situation?
Yeah.
You know, and there's the shot. And I'm not sure there really is anything that's funnier instantly than the shot of two people post-sex who have had very different reactions to having had sex.
Absolutely brilliant shot.
And it's got that shot, you know, and Alec Baldwin looks so content and proud and happy, and Meryl Streep looks disheveled and confused and horrified, and you can tell that she also enjoyed it, but she can't believe she enjoyed it. And this is all in a, you know, 3-second shot of the two of them, and it's funny. It's really funny.
And the scenes where she and Steve Martin are getting stoned together, I could watch that for hours. It's just so fun. It's so funny. It's not heavy-handed. They're just having a delightful time. And yeah, just showing off these like amazing comedy chops. And again, it plays back too into the fact that these are two actors in their 60s, maybe even in their 70s, might have been. No, 60s.
Steve Martin, I think, was in his late 60s, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were having so much fun, you know?
Well, and then
it's not stodgy, it's not serious, it's fun.
It's not. And then you throw the little sprinkle on top of the sundae that is possibly the greatest part of this movie, John Krasinski.
Oh,
like, I'm sorry. He's up against Meryl and Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin, and he still might be the funniest part of this movie.
He has his full Jim Halpert staring directly into the camera skills on display here in these moments where he has to be the one part of the family. He plays their eldest daughter's fiance, you know, so he's sort of an insider outsider character, and he catches on pretty early on that Jake and Jane are having an affair, and he has to keep it to himself. So there are these just incredible moments with his facial expressions. Oh, it's just, and I loved reading so too that he was so nervous to act with Meryl Streep that he like had to be calmed down on set. It was, well, like, overwhelming for him.
I mean, imagine, right? Again, the other three young adult characters, four young adult characters even, if you're talking about Alec Baldwin's wife's character as well, they're just reading some lines. Like, they all give lovely performances, but they're not particularly difficult performances. But John Krasinski really has to bring his A-game, and he's in a couple of these, you know, French farcical slamming door type scenes with these three powerhouses. I'm sure that that was a little intimidating.
Just a little.
The scene when he walks in and discovers that they're getting high in his guest bathroom. The things that his face does. Talk about a face journey.
Chef's kiss.
So yeah, I feel like we've talked a lot about all the things we love about this movie. Mm-hmm. I do want to touch on one of the biggest, the things that I think is the biggest flaw in this movie, which is, as much fun as it is, not a lot really happens.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the plot is very straightforward, very predictable, and in fact doesn't even get as convoluted as you expect it to. You know, really, they sleep together a couple of times, Jane decides she's done, and then they're done. You know, there's no, she keeps going back to him and she can't figure out why. There's no, you know, big confrontation with his wife where they all are yelling at each other. It just sort of, the affair happens, everyone finds out about the affair's over. Everyone ends up happy in the end, right? Like, it's very straightforward. And while there's something to be said for the beauty of that clean plot, it does have moments where you want it to be a bit more interesting.
Yeah, like, for example, I was really intrigued from the beginning with Steve Martin's character, Adam. But because of that simple plot structure, there isn't actually a whole lot for him to do, as it turns out, right? Like, even when he sort of briefly thinks the relationship isn't going the way he wants it to, it doesn't even have that many fireworks in terms of plot. He basically just says, like, well, it seems like you got things to work out with your husband, so you should probably do that. Like, it's very, it's very placid. So, like, what you end up getting with this movie is really, like, as we've said, I mean, what it ends up being is a very sumptuous celebration of American material culture with a light and frothy rom-com plot somewhere buried underneath. A lot of the runtime, as you point out, now that I'm thinking about it, is spent on, you know, establishing shots of the bakery and scenes of Meryl Streep cooking and them eating cake and making chocolate croissant, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I saw one of the reviews that had come out around this time when the movie came out, compared the movie to the chocolate croissants. It said it was sweet and lovely, but not particularly filling.
I think that's absolutely, like, when I saw that the runtime was 2 hours, I remember watching the clock running, and when we got to the hour mark, I was like, okay, but, like, how are they going to fill the rest of this hour, team? I don't think there's that much plot left from what I can tell, and I'm not a complete expert, but I'm pretty close to an expert, and there's not much plot left here. Yeah, it is. It's not very filling.
They do just sort of fill it in with some food porn and some architecture porn. And on that note,
and an extremely charming cast.
And an extremely charming cast, yes, which is really what makes this sing. But on that note, I think we should talk about the food.
Let's talk about the food.
Because, you know, for a movie that's not particularly deep, I will say food as an element is itself a character in this movie. And I think that there really are sort of multiple times where the desire to eat Jane's baking is a not so subtle stand-in for a variety of things, sexual and otherwise. But, you know, there's multiple times where she's, you know, trying to kick Jake out of the house, or Jake's about to leave, and then he's like, is that food on the table? Do you have some of that noodle thing left? Oh, is your chocolate cake here? You know, and then she's on the date with Steve Martin's character, and they're getting to the end of the date, and he's like, you know what I could really use? Some more of that chocolate cake. And then they go to the bakery and have their cute flirty baking scene.
Yes, which culminates in, so the in the cute flirty baking scene, if you haven't seen this, they make, first of all, I have a lot to say as an amateur baker about the fact that they made puff pastry that quickly. But anyway, we can talk about that later. They make chocolate croissants from scratch, which involves a lot of folding and spreading and rubbing. And then they have this very pretty spicy little encounter where Steve Martin slowly rolls up her sleeve, kind of recreating the kind of rolling process of making a croissant.
Oh, very nice.
Which I thought was very nice, but it is a pretty thinly veiled, as you say, throughout metaphors, right? Like you said, Jake is always coming back for leftovers. He's always coming back for his favorite meals that he remembers. And Adam and her make new things together, right?
They make right, he's songs. Discovering they make new favorite house. Treats. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, it's not subtle, but it works too. It's not like it's so over the top that you're like, oh God, a food metaphor, you know, but it's no. clear what they're trying to say.
Yeah, and it definitely adds to the whole sort of like, persona of Jane as a character too, right? Mm-hmm. That she is a domestic goddess, but she's also a business owner, which gives her a very particular position. Like it's sort of reflective of how she sits as an actor in this love triangle too, right? The love triangle moves around her. Like she doesn't act too much in the love triangle. The love triangle kind of comes to her, which I appreciate and I think is related also. It's sort of like a parallel to what it's like to sort of live in that sort of like domestic corporate hybrid space that she lives in professionally too.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for the idea of this professional woman who has had to be completely on top of it her entire life. You know, this is a character that we do see with relative frequency, and we've seen it in other Nancy Meyers movies as well. But the older woman who had to be number one mom and had to be number one at her job and had to, you know, babysit her child of a husband and keep it all together. And she's finally at this point where she can let go of a few things and it comes close to unraveling her. And I think that really speaks to an experience that I think a lot of women of that generation and of that age have, you know, where they've, you know, had to like keep it together for so long that when they have the opportunity to make a mistake, to loosen up a bit, it really sort of surprises them.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Like the moment that she sort of eases into this like empty nester divorcee time of her life is when things just sort of like come to her easily in a way, right? And in ways that she is surprised by. Her friends make this really interesting comment where she comes to them and says she's having the affair, and they say, oh my God, like, that's wrong. But, like, you've never done anything wrong in your whole life. Like, this is just going to be the first wrong thing you ever did. And I thought that that really alludes to what you're saying, that, like, in this new period of her life, she's sort of allowed to, like, be a little bit bad, but in a safe way, in ways that are indulgent and easy, at least as our society sees them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think at some point we're going to have to cover the movie Something's Gotta Give, which is another Nancy Meyers with arguably a very similar setup. But I think that the difference in leads in the two movies really makes the two movies stand out quite separately to me. Because in Something's Gotta Give, you've got Diane Keaton in this role. And she also has this successful woman who's, like, made a lot of money and been on top of her career, but also been the perfect mom. And now she's divorced and doesn't know what to do with her time. But she's much more neurotic about it. And, you know, I think Nancy Meyers wrote one of these movies for her friend Diane Keaton. And she wrote one of these movies for her friend Meryl Streep. And there's probably, you know, it's probably clear why sort of those two characters went in different directions. But in Something's Gotta Give, Diane Keaton's character has a younger man who's pursuing her who's sort of enamored with how perfect she is. And the man her own age who's pursuing her is very aware of all of her faults. And I feel like there's something missing in this movie where there's never a moment where the members of the love triangle are just like, all right, I fucked up. I do that sometimes. You know, Meryl Streep, even at the end, she's still this sort of maternal goddess, Martha Stewart before jail time kind of perfect character. Even when she says, I know I had a part to play in our divorce, like, even that's her being magnanimous and motherly, and there's no sort of just, like, being human and screwing up. And I did miss that. I wanted that to be added to these characters who were otherwise quite, you know, rich and delicious.
Yeah, I was really hoping there would be a scene where Jane and Agnes would have a long conversation about affairs, because they had that to relate on, right? That they had both been the other woman with Jake at one point or another. And there's a real interesting conversation that could have gone on between them about attraction and solidarity and transgression and love and being a woman at different stages of your life. And it wasn't there. And it is sort of part of what we were saying earlier, that, like, the movie is really, really not interested in that. It is really, really interested in Meryl Streep, domestic goddess, TM.
And so am I.
And so am I. Every week on the podcast, we'd like to recognize our patrons on Patreon who are the best. And who I will have know that if they wanted to do the for real work of making puff pastry with me over the course of 3 days with some frozen butter and a shit ton of flour, I would do that with them, because that's how much I care. That is how much I care. Our romantic leads are Bob, Esther, Ian, and Trey. Seriously, I'll send you some croissants. We love you.
If you want to become a patron on our Patreon, you can join us at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys. We have multiple levels that you can join to access behind-the-scenes fun tidbits from our show, and you can support us for as little as $1 a month and get to participate in our monthly polls. You can also check out our shop at romcomkilljoys.threadless.com and like us on Facebook and Instagram. Well, I'm in the mood for lots more treats, I have to say. Janelle, what would you advise us to sink our teeth into this week?
Oh, Eliza, boy, do I have a supplement for you. Because you know what? I know this movie has problems, and we've talked about a lot of them, but I don't have the heart to kill it. I don't. So here's a supplement. So I was thinking a lot about this, and I was thinking about, what are my favorite, like, food-related fantasies? Like, who are my personal domestic goddesses a la Jane Adler? And I have to give my big goth girl heart away to the one and only Christine McConnell. If you are not familiar with the work of goth domestic goddess Tim Burton pinup girl Christine McConnell and every magical domestic thing she does, I would check out her short-lived but absolutely iconic Netflix series, The Curious Creations of Christine McConnell. and also her YouTube channel. She uses all manner of self-taught skills like exceptional baking, woodworking, sewing, metalworking, to do anything, literally anything. Like the Winchester Mystery House in California, you've heard of it. Woman who believed the ghosts were following her built an endlessly expanding house. Oh yeah, she built a gingerbread house of that. A gingerbread house. Oh yeah. Everything she does is extremely spooky. She makes these incredible spider cookies. She made an entire spooky house in the woods in California, and she's working on a new one in New York now. It is absolutely magnificent. I am obsessed with her. So my supplement is check out my personal gothy domestic goddess, Christine McConnell.
Well, I have to say, for this week, I was trying to think, you know, what was I inspired to watch after it? And did I want an antidote or a supplement, etc.? I think much like this movie, which is delightful and delicious, but not particularly deep or surprising, my antidotes are not going to be particularly deep or surprising either. But I feel like they're what, you know, I want to watch when I'm in the mood for something like this. So the first, if, again, you want something that just features absolutely phenomenal actors who, you know, have really sunk their teeth into years in Hollywood and now are getting to live their best lives and do their best performances and really have fun with it, go watch Grace and Frankie. Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin play two recent divorcees whose husbands have left each other for each other. And so the two women move in together to try to figure out how to deal with the rest of their lives. And they are so funny and so delightful. And you can tell they're having the time of their lives playing these characters. And it also, again, has a younger cast as well who are a great sort of, you know, reflection of the older cast that they act opposite of. It's really fun. It's a great way to spend an afternoon. And again, lots of just like beautiful big kitchens, parties at fancy, you know, places on the beach for no explicable reason. It's just, it's, I feel like it's got all of those wonderful things where you're like, if I want to just close my eyes and pretend that I'm fabulously wealthy and divorced and angry at my husband and going to just throw parties and make dildos in order to get back at him, like, this is the show for you.
Honestly, I'm really having a moment here where I'm realizing that, like, people under 35 really should start watching these Nancy Meyers properties and Grace and Frankie just to fantasize about what it would be like to have a large kitchen. Just, like, dream about it. Just, like, dream about, like, slate countertops and, like, Viking ranges and, like, Sub-Zero fridges.
All of the finest little gadgets. Yeah, yeah, that's what I like to think about when I close my eyes and don't want to picture my dirty apartment. The other thing that I would suggest this week, if what you're looking for is just a little, you know, some good food porn and some nice flirty food-related scenes, go watch Chocolat. Because there's really no movie that has better, like, slow-mo shots of molten chocolate pouring into a pie plate and, like, beautifully lit shots of truffles being placed on a doily. And, you know, I mean, like, you can't get better than Chocolat. And then they're like, and there's, like, a, you know, fun, sexy storyline and a fun, charming, weird French people. Like, it's everything you need in a movie.
Let it wash over you. Don't think about it too much and don't worry about Johnny Depp. Just compartmentalize.
Just enjoy the aesthetics. That's what I'm taking away from this week. Enjoy the aesthetics.
I you know, normally my critical brain would be like, Eliza, that's a good point, but aesthetics are political and they're created by structural issues that we all need to worry about. I don't care. This week, we are in Sonoma. We are at a vineyard. COVID is over and we are enjoying ourselves. That is where my mind is at.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, right at the beginning of this movie, they're drinking at a bar at the hotel. And I was like, I want to drink at a bar at a hotel? That sounds great. I want to run into my family as they're all arriving for the weekend's activities.
Oh my God. Seriously. Just the littlest things are so painfully beautiful. People going into a bakery without wearing masks. Oh, I mean, oh.
Talk about your fantasies. Well, I think it's safe to say we've lost it. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great week. Talk to you next
week. See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to support us further, you can become a patron at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys.
Our theme song is Lady Slut Hitchhike Love by the band A Giant Dog, and the song you're listening to now is a cover of Baby Love by Colin Langaness.
Remember, Killjoys, don't let anyone kill your joy.
Not a rom-com. Not us.
Not anyone.
See you next time.
Instead of breaking up, it starts and kissing and making